Tokyo, Australia, Germany.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, you know, howdy. You know what? Sometimes you don't wait for Agnes to bring the blowgun and the Thorazine dart. You just suck the Thorazine right out of the end of the dart and... ah, refreshing burst of flavor! Oh! 15 minutes past the hour. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. That's where you go if you want to get this... jump into the chat room while you're waiting for me to start the program because, you know, Frontier broke the... internet again. Ooh-wee. We do pay some serious dollars to have some seriously tough internet, courtesy of Frontier Communications. Yeehaw! Dang. Oh, I guess it's only fitting it is Thorn in the Side Thursday now, isn't it? But yes, if you would like to be part of the multimedia real-time madcap zany real-time extravaganza that is the Horn chat room, I encourage you to run on over to HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, click on chat room, pick yourself out a screen name and a password, and just jump right in. I'm there, and you will be welcomed by, when you get there, after you pick out the screen name and the password, as mentioned afore, you'll be welcomed by Asa and Hoghead and Jug of Punch and Ralphs and Snork and Steve from Georgistan and Terry in Saigon and VT Blom and Will in Chicago and more as they wander in. Yes. Thank you very kindly, Randy and PA, letting me know that I am reaching. We're live on iTunes on his Mac. Thank you very kindly, Randy. Much obliged. Yeah, I got a whole bunch of throw the third switch. It wasn't a third switch issue. It was a Frontier issue. Hmm. Yeah. But everything's almost okay. I mean... The highfalutin static IP line, it's still busted, but apart from that, yeah, okay. And it's Thorn in the Side Thursday. And a gentle reminder, the same gentle reminder that attends and accompanies every beginning of the program here. This is a listener-supported program. And as such, it relies upon the goodwill and determination of the Horn Family Community Congregation to keep it on the air. Pulled up a little bit short last night. And so we would have had a we would have had a $270 fundraising goal this evening. But you know what's really cool? We have a merry little band of monthly subscribers to the Horn. And I encourage lots more people to join that merry little band. And so when we wind up some nights when we wind up with a deficit, the deficit gets made up by the subscribers. So big thanks go out to Janice in Wisconsin and John in Tallahassee, and Greg in San Antonio, and Ron in the far frozen north. Well, not frozen yet, but you get the idea. And Terry in Ohio. Thank you, one and all. Because of you, we've only got a $200 fundraising goal, the regular $200, instead of $270 as we wrapped up last night. So that is hugely helpful. Thank you very kindly to all of our subscribers. And a little reminder before we jump into the meat of the program, and meaty and delicious, yes. We try, the members of the Horn Family Community Congregation try to reward subscribers and make it worth your while. And we do that by among other things, sending out bumper stickers. And sometimes there are premiums on the table. Last month, we got a premium courtesy of our buddy Harold at the Secret Open Carry Happy Trails Roundup Society. Right now, there's a premium available for new subscribers through Election Day, courtesy of Ralph's. Every new subscriber between now and Election Day gets $11 in honor of the 11th anniversary of the Horn, which passed just, you know, last week. Every new subscriber to the Horn gets $11 added to their first month's subscription. On top of that, between now and Veterans Day, the 11th day of November, Armistice Day, Tracy is offering a $5 bump to every new subscriber, or the first 10 subscribers that come along between now and then. So if you've never, you know, if you're sitting there thinking, well, you know, golly, this is easy. You mark it on your calendar, and it comes out the same day every month, and that way you know. And plus, you get, between now and Election Day, you get $16 added to your first month subscription, which is a big help to the Horn, and is a boost to your money. And then after Election Day, it's a $5 bounce. So jump in there, jump right in there, and we really need the help. And you know, this evening we need with somebody at $200 or a couple of people at $100 or four people at $50 or eight people at $25 or 16 people at $12.50 or 32 people at 6 1/4 or 64 people at $3.13. And we'll be done with fundraising for the evening. Okay? So that's where we stand in terms of fundraising and keeping the Horn on the air. And that's all that keeps the Horn on the air because, you know, no advertising. And we don't charge anybody for anything. This is a definitely non-capitalist attempt to provide broadcast alternatives to the for-profit media. So that's all out of the way, except the fact that if you prefer to operate by the U.S. Postal Service, you are welcome to so do. Checks and money orders, please, made payable to the Horn. Mailed to the Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, BECKLEY, WV 25801. And send me an email so I can tell Boss Man Wayne so he can leave his spider-proof gloves in the truck for when he reaches into the Horn Echo Chamber, otherwise known as the mailbox. And that way, you know, he doesn't have to take anything with him except maybe, you know, a frog gig in case he runs into a member of the Klan. Because, of course, the Klan picks up their mail at the same address, that UPS store there, because for some reason or another, no one can convince the United Parcel Service that doing business with the Klan is a bad idea. Now, I'm sure there's lots and lots of Make America Great Again stickers going into the Klan mailbox there at 1038 North Eisenhower Drive. Because those are the kind of people that support Donald Trump. There's no getting around it. I heard some hand-wringing Manhattanite being interviewed by Terry Gross on her program today over on National Petroleum Radio. And he was talking about how we can't, you know, he's written this article about Hillary's campaign, blah, blah, blah. And he wrote a book in 2012 called The Unwinding. I forget the guy's name. But he did this hand-wringing thing where he said, I just don't understand. I don't see how our... Wait a minute, got to have reverb for that. Our democracy can survive if we're just going to write off 40 or 45% of the American electorate. That kind of shit drives me crazy. You know, the elite liberal hand-wringing. Because we're not writing off 40 to 45% of the electorate. 40 to 45% of the electorate have written themselves off. 40 to 45% of the electorate, if that's how it turns out, and and Madam Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton actually wins on Tuesday, and I'm not entirely convinced that that's going to happen. Many of you aren't either. But if she does win, that 40 to 45% doesn't give a good goddamn what happens to this country. And they care less enough about the country to support a man who is an obvious fascist, a man who is in league with a right-wing authoritarian dictator in Russia. Oh, I know. There's those the precious sparkle fart powered unicorn people who think that Vladimir Putin is just so misunderstood. Bullshit. He's a thug. But anyway, I don't know what to do about that 45% of the people, but I don't like the idea of blaming the rest of us for writing them off. I mean, goddamn, what do you want us to do when 40 to 45% of the electorate are out there playing footsie and swanning around with the fucking Klan? The Klan, for Christ's sakes. Neo-Nazis. The Klan. No shit. Okay, I know it's 2016. We should be past this. We should be working on starship designs. But in 2016, here on the third day of November, the Klan is phone banking for Donald fucking Trump. The Nazis are going door to door for Donald fucking Trump. And the people that we cut a pass to, you know, the second grade teachers and things like that who are backing Donald Trump, well, you know, I mean, they just, well, you know, they don't feel like they've got a place in Hillary's America. They've been left behind by the trade deals. Oh, tell it to the Marines. I don't know of anyone out there supporting Donald Trump who doesn't also have, at some point in their political, philosophical, ethical, moral lives, some other, you know, objectionable stuff going on.
Well, I mean, you know, I'm worried about the economy. No, of course, I don't like those Klansmen and I don't like those Nazis. But you know what? America just can't be great if those homos keep getting married.
Oh! Well, you know, I ain't real comfortable with the fact that the Klan is supporting Trump. But, you know, we got to make America great again and prevent them Mexicans from taking our jobs. Eep!
Well, goodness me, you know, that Trump, you know, some of the people who support him, I certainly don't agree with him, but I'm worried about what's going to happen when I go to the potty. There might be a drag queen in there. Ah!
You see what I'm getting at? I mean, the for-profit media just, they dance around the essential problem here, and that is that this country has a sickness. It's not a sickness that's brought on by a couple of guys being able to pick out a China pattern, or a pair of lesbians picking out wall sconces, or window treatments. America doesn't have a problem because a 14-year-old little girl who got raped by her daddy has the little wad of tissue removed from her uterus. That's not killing America.
the problems that America faces are the problems that are largely created by the people who support Donald fucking Trump. You know, the people who said Blue Lives Matter and then got real quiet when it was a white guy in Iowa who gunned down a couple of cops. Yeah. A white guy with mental health issues who never should have had access to firearms.
Yeah, but we gotta have our Second Amendment in case the government decides to put its jackbooted jackboots down on our necks right next to our tattoo that says only God can judge me.
America doesn't, you know, the United States of America isn't failing. Because a certain sector of the population wants to be paid a living wage for living work. It is, however, in trouble, big trouble, when people turn a blind eye to human rights issues. And just, you know, say, oh, what the hell about the idea of having clean drinking water or air that you can't see but will kill you? I mean, that's just kind of where I am. So, you know what I need to do? I need to not turn on the radio in the car. That's what I need to do. Because that kind of stuff just gets under my. I just don't need to. A note coming from Kim in New Jersey. Subject line: End of the world as we know it. Kim says, very angry here. Sorry for that. Venting now. Please ask the Horn family how they plan on surviving the rest of their lives under fascism. We are all so fucked. I'm trying to find a way to zone out of politics for the rest of my life. Of course, that would mean tuning out from your show. It shouldn't be too hard because I have no room in my life for family members, including Horn family members, who aren't voting for Hillary. Anyone not voting for her are by default voting against me. I take it personally. I will lose my marriage equality. LGBTQQQ people will be persecuted to an extent that we can't even imagine. Yet. I will lose my hard-earned Social Security. I will lose my Medicare. This is not an exaggeration. Those fucking Republicans will take it all away. It will happen quickly when they control the House, Senate, and White House, followed quickly by the Supreme Court. It will be irreversible. Make no mistake about that. Anyone who uses Obamacare will lose it. That will be all of it, including pre-existing conditions and coverage for adult children. And let's add into that the state-sponsored Medicaid. Or not state-sponsored, but the state-determined Medicaid expansion. Like, you know, I'll lose mine. Everybody in states that have the Medicaid expansion will lose theirs. But that's okay, because as I was told by a Jill Stein voter the other day on Twitter, the empire must fall! Kim continues, and Bernie? Like all liberals, he will be totally irrelevant under the upcoming fascist wave. If his supporters really cared about what he stands for, they would all vote for Hillary. What don't the Bernie supporters understand about this? Bernie would have a platform under Hillary. Bernie will be totally muted under the fascist Trump regime. These are my rambling thoughts, signed Kim in New Jersey. And there's not much there to disagree with.
I can't, well, I won't begin to try to speak for the Purity Brigade. Because for the most part, I don't understand them. Or I don't understand what they don't understand. I don't understand what they don't understand about a binary system. About there being, you know, one choice on Tuesday. You know, is it vanity? Honestly, I don't know. I saw our buddy Michael in Madison posted something from someone on Twitter named Eugene Merman. Who tweeted, "Why are people voting for Jill Stein when you can just stand in a trash can and yell at people who walk by?" I think it's a valid question. Of course, it has cost the Horn family community congregation. It has cost us members. The fact that we will not join the Purity Brigade. The fact that we will not, that some of us will not vote to deliberately fuck over people who are the least able to withstand being fucked over. You know, people on Social Security, people on disability, people on Medicare, people on Medicaid. Yeah, I'm sorry. Anyone who says something like the empire must fall doesn't give a good goddamn about his or her fellow Americans. And they're certainly not prepared to take any responsibility or care of the people who will be thrown into the gutters, under the bus, whatever, by a Trump victory. And of course, I have to offer this with the usual caveat that Hillary was not my first choice. Hell, she wasn't my second choice. No. My first choice was Bernie. I guess my second choice would have been the guy whose name I can't remember from Maryland now. But, you know, you don't get... there's no ice cream on offer on November the 8th. There's Hillary and Trump. And yes, I've been repeatedly told by the Purity Brigade that... my vote doesn't count in West Virginia because the state is going to go so thoroughly for Donald Trump. And I guess it's true. My vote doesn't count to the Purity Brigade. My vote is unimportant as long as, you know, I'm not casting a vote for someone who can never, ever, 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 ever be elected president and only serve if she gets enough votes to be relevant to help Donald Trump become president. Because, once again, it is a political law that third parties tend to harm the dominant party with which they are most nearly politically aligned, and they never hurt the party with which they are not aligned. Eh? See how it works? Yeah, Martin O'Malley. Thank you, Steve from Georgistan. Oh, and thanks to Steve from Georgistan for getting us started this evening. Cletus, Steve told me Cletus insisted that he send along a Jackson, and so that's much obliged, Cletus. Cletus is a very good girl. She's a sweet puppy. and I didn't even mean for the program to start this way. I'm sure we'll lose another listener or two out of this. But you know what? I'm not here to salve anybody's delicate fifis if that includes me validating people doing something stupid to their fellow Americans. And not just stupid, mean. Let's deal with that. Mean. Note coming in from John. Subject line, Empire must fall, or Empire falls. Just as when Rome fell, the chaos, collapsed economic conditions, and the rampant rape and pillage that happened when the empire falls shows how short-viewed people can get. Oh, that's not going to happen here. We will be propelled by unicorn sparkle farts into a bold and beautiful new future, where we'll all go and spray paint a bulldozer blade in glorious solidarity with the revolution, and the Apocarev will come. Yeah, everywhere I go, I see Trump stickers. And because I'm not politically asleep, because I have a certain amount of education and curiosity and a certain amount of regard for understanding how certain systems work, I can't help but look at someone with a Trump sticker and just kind of say, the fuck is wrong with you? And I guess I'm what the guy on being interviewed by Terry Gross over on National Petroleum Radio was hand-wringing about. I mean, we live for the time being in a country where, yeah, we don't necessarily wear our politics on our sleeves, but we may wind up wearing them pinned to our shirts sooner or later if things go sideways next Tuesday. And let me offer as a sort of caveat, I'm more than happy to be proven wrong. To the extent that we've created a record that may survive somewhere down the ages, and somebody's listening to this 200 years from now, if we've still got the technology to decode little zeros and ones into meaningful speech. And they go, huh, Bob sure was worried about a lot of nothing. Look at the wonderful world we live in. We stopped global warming. Good. Great. Hello, future. Let me tell you that I'm very proud to have been wrong. Yeah, on the other hand, if in a couple or 300 years, Og and Blap are looking at this funny little box on the ground and Og picks it up and whacks Blap across the head with it while grunting and taking from him his roots and berries, well, there won't be anybody to say, goddamn, Bob was right. It's kind of a tough little predicament to be in, isn't it? Yeah. But it's Thorn in the Side Thursday, and we have thorns. And they're not much fun. A little of this, a little of that. The vague possibility that we may get away from politics and just talk about something else for a minute or two.
Quit telling people how to think about the future, Bob.
Yeah.
It's good, and as far as scheduling is concerned, Tuesday night, like I said last night, Sparky was out of the room, but I think Tuesday night we may go for a full 3 hour front porch. And just have a kind of a free for all. And I hope lots of people will participate. You know, I think we've got room for like 19 people in the Horn Malloy Skype chat group. And of course we have the newly much more functional stress line now. So that would be like 20. And, you know, it's going to be like either political Christmas. Well, no, because nobody's really excited about Hillary Clinton. So it'll be like, I don't know, political Groundhog Day. Or what's a holiday we all really hate? Political Columbus Day. Yeah. But at least we'll be together. That's my thinking. That's my plan. I'm going to go, and I'm a purist. I'm also white and male and older. So I'm not going to have a problem. And I'm voting. I'm voting rurally, and there aren't many people of color in my community, so I'll be able to just vote, get in, get out, get done. And I'll go and, you know, I'll go and vote on Tuesday. Like my father and mother did before me, and my grandfather and my grandmother, after they decided to let her vote, did before them, and all my grandfathers did before that. You know, at least so long as they owned property at some point in time, then, you know, they got to vote. It's kind of what I mean about our democracy. If this is our democracy, we're not very good at it. Just saying. Not saying, just saying. But one of the races to watch will be here in West Virginia. And it'll be the governor's race, in which a Republican, skeevy, sleazy used car dealer is running for the governor's office against a sleazy, skeevy coal baron. The sleazy, skeevy used car dealer is the Republican, again. And the sleazy, skeevy mountaintop removing human being poisoning coal baron is the Republican. Well, I mean, he was until like a year ago or a year and a half or two when he suddenly changed his registration and declared himself a Democrat so as to get the nomination for governor. And rumor has it that he's up by double digits on the sleazy, skeevy used car dealer. But in the mix is, no kidding, a guy named Moran. And, of course, he's the libertarian. Get a brain, Morans! He'll probably poll around 1% of the vote. On the other hand, a woman named Charlotte Pritt, who was the Democratic Party nominee for governor, the first woman ever nominated to run for governor,
by the Democratic Party in the state of West Virginia back in 1996. I remember it well. I supported her loudly. I gave to her campaign. And she got sleazed and slimed by the slimiest politician in the state of West Virginia, a man by the name of Joe Manchin, who bankrolled and fueled a slimy campaign called Democrats for Underwood, in which we elected as governor of West Virginia for 4 years a guy who was essentially a corpse at a wake. There are stories that when the Christmas party at the governor's mansion after Underwood won, they would literally prop him up in the corner like a corpse at an Irish wake with a drink in his hand. He's dead now. When the actual event happened, it was kind of hard to tell what the status change. But now Charlotte Pritt, having abandoned the party and the people who supported her in it, is running on the Mountain Party ticket, which is, of course, the equivalent of the Green Party here in West, almost level West by Cole, Virginia, Stan. And that's where it gets interesting, West Virginia does. Because she might actually poll, because so many people, the progressive base in West Virginia are so largely disgusted with the idea of voting for a Democrat who is actually a Republican, who is a coal baron, who has made billions of dollars by poisoning innocent human beings, that they're going to go and vote for Charlotte Pritt. And once again, that political law is in effect. It's immutable. Third parties damage the parties with whom they are most nearly philosophically aligned and do no harm whatsoever to the party again, compared to whom they are most diametrically opposed. So she might poll 8-9%, maybe 10. I mean, she's got enough money that there are actual signs on the side of the road now. I mean, I haven't seen anybody I haven't seen any signs, any Charlotte Pritt signs in anybody's actual yards or anything. But, you know, that little cadre of Charlotte Pritt volunteers has run around and, you know, stuck them along the side of the road once in a while. Which is pretty impressive, because the Mountain Party generally can't afford the cost of a 5-pound bag of sugar and a couple of packages of Kool-Aid with which to mix up the beverage for the, oh, look, we just lost another fucking election party. But, yeah. And so it'll be interesting. And by God, you know what? That'll be a great way for progressives in West Virginia to show the power and the importance of their voices, by handing us a Republican governor who says that anybody who makes union wages makes an unfairly high wage. Won't that be great? The empire must fall, Bob! That'll be cool. Yeah, trivia fact, Cecil Underwood holds the distinction among all governors of all states to be both the youngest governor of a state and the oldest governor of a state. He was a fuck-up when he was the youngest governor of a state, and a fuck-up when he was the oldest governor of the state. So, it's one of those moments where you take solace in that line from Forrest Gump, right?
At least I ain't led no humdrum life.
So we got that. Other thorns in the side? We've got an abundance of them. Lots and lots. I guess you saw where the Green Party filed a lawsuit to prevent the Republican Party from intimidating voters at the polls, didn't you? Oh, wait, that wasn't the Green Party. They don't give a fuck. It was the Democratic Party. The evil, corrupt Democratic National Committee that filed a lawsuit against the Republican Party to keep them from coordinating with the Trump campaign in an effort to intimidate voters away from the polls. Yeah, see, Robert up near Morgantown says if Charlotte Pritt were straight up against either Cole or Justice, she'd win. But we'll never know that, Robert, because she ran away from the fight. She could have run in the Democratic primary, and I think she could have easily beaten Kessler or Goodwin. And maybe even Justice. If there had been somebody for all the progressives to rally around in the Democratic primary process, maybe Justice wouldn't have said at the debate,
I don't want anybody to vote for me that don't care about Coe.
Which puts me in a quandary. How often is it that a candidate actually looks out at the electorate and says, you, I don't want your vote. I mean, I don't want to be a bit part player don't throw me in the old briar patch, please. No. So I'm in a quandary. Do I leave it blank? Do I bite the bullet and vote for Justice against every principle I have? Do I reward a candidate from running away from the process and instead merely playing spoiler? Maybe I should just vote for the Constitution Party candidate, some guy named Hudak, who doesn't care about anything but the precious little fetuses. Maybe I should write in Boss Man Wayne. By God, I think that's what I'll do. I'll write in Boss Man Wayne. At least I can feel good about that. Andy in the Netherlands. With a note. Subject line, I want to tell people how to vote. Hi, Bob. I'm a Green, and I want to tell people how to vote. The Green Party is just a small fringe party in any country around the globe, including where I live in the Netherlands. No chance Stein would get anywhere near enough votes to become president. Vote Hillary Rodham Clinton. You hear this? This is a European Green, where the Greens, even though small, are actually a serious political party participating in a parliamentary process. Vote Hillary Rodham Clinton. What's at stake? Goddamn civil society, that's what. I'm not a betting man, but I'm pretty sure the KKK and skinhead types are going to start lynching Mexicans and Muslims and other minorities if Trump gets elected. Swear to God, no joke, this election is between civil society and a thuggish regime like what's going on in Turkey right now. Vote civil society, everybody. signed Andy in the Netherlands, who is a real live, honest to God Green. Then there are the Greens in Russia, who wouldn't pee on Jill Stein to put out a fire after she went over and cuddled up to Big Bad Vladdy Daddy and spit all over their human rights concerns. But go ahead. If you're in Florida, go ahead. Vote for Jill Stein. I'm sure your soul, your spirit will feel so pure after you fuck the rest of us. Go ahead. Name of election night, Scott and Punky writes, to paraphrase the title of a great Steve Allen song, this could be the start of something. A, sane. B, insane. C, better. D, who the hell knows? Yeah. Robert up near Morgantown says, no one should get in any office on less than 50.01% of the vote. Well, sorry, it doesn't work that way. Whoever gets the most votes wins. We don't have an electoral college in West Virginia. And we don't have a constitutional provision for keeping someone with a plurality but not a majority out of the White House. In fact, we have a constitutional provision for letting people into the White House who don't get 50.01% of the popular vote. Anybody remember, you know, Dim Leader? Sure. Note coming in from Andy in response to Kim's email in New Jersey. Subject line, Kim's email. See, that's how I knew. What if we've already been living in a fascist state? What if we're already there? Which is what I believe. Every electronic and telephony step we take is being recorded, save for when the state wants to bring it up against you. An FBI run amok, setting up an active recalcitrant citizenry with a phalanx of informants for infractions against the state. I could use Medi-Cal, California Medicare, but the state will confiscate my assets for the amount I use, so why use it for that big surprise bill? My income has been severely reduced by about four-fifths. As far as I'm concerned, the empire drastically spiraled downward out of Bill of Rights control after that 2000 election. The government was taken from us in 2000 and 2004, stolen. And as far as gay rights issues go, the gay community has made some great strides over the last few years. Marriage, military service, wealth transfer equality. Even the corporations got in on the act supporting gay rights issues, including Goldman's own CEO, Lloyd Blankfein. In many progressive groups, the fight for gay civil rights took the air out of the progressive social economic agenda for the rest of the population, especially when it comes to workplace economic income gains. For example, the fight for $15 and better pay and benefits for low-wage workers. Democratic groups I belong to spent many meeting hours setting strategy, fighting for, and executing tactics for gay rights issues. Kim, good for you. You deserve these gains. But they'll be lost. That's me. That's not Andy. They'll be lost. And really, you know, I'm not one of these people who's concerned with passing on wealth to the next generation. So I don't much care about the bill that comes at the end of my days. I would just like for the end of my days not to come so quick. And I've got a better shot at that as long as I still have health care. And of course, you know, well, but I've made my point. Kitty in Boston says, stop letting Dutch people tell us how to vote, Bob. Wait a minute. Yeah, you get a cowbell for that, Kitty. That's your first cowbell, I think. Subject line, poll intimidation. Clarence writes, that decision the federal judge made in Pennsylvania was a wise decision. Rumors in my area of Philly was that some non-politicals were looking forward to greeting the outside poll watchers. Election day would have been quite interesting. Yeah, necessarily the Republicans and the Trumpansies, they weren't going to go and poll watch in nice white suburban voting districts. Oh, no. But the DNC did that. The hopelessly corrupt, filthy election-stealing DNC. Could it be that things are often much more a shade of gray than they are black or white? Talking about issues, not people. Somehow it's hard to resist that notion. Oh, and I don't know, did you catch this? The FBI is now investigating itself. Man, the wheels are just flying off the FBI, aren't they? They've got this, I don't know, maybe they're finally living up to that name that's plastered on the front of their building, the J. Edgar Hoover FBI building. Maybe we ought to rename that building for somebody who was an actual hero for civil rights. Maybe the Eugene V. Debs FBI building. Jesus, Debs would roll in his grave, wouldn't he? So the FBI has a Twitter handle, at FBI Records Vault. It hadn't done diddly for a year, and then, boom! On the next to last day of October, at 4 o'clock in the morning, as if, you know, I don't know, as if tweeting from, you know, sitting in that tacky penthouse with Donald Trump, 4 o'clock in the morning, bang! The document dump on Fred Trump, describing him as a real estate developer and philanthropist. Philanthropist. You know, who was a member of the Klan. A Klanthropist. And then 2 days later, a document dump about Bill Clinton controversially handing a pardon to Mark Rich. Mm-hmm. Well, now and then the Twitter account went back to sleep again. So Think Progress reached out and learned that the FBI Inspection Division is going to investigate the Twitter account. And then the Investigation Division will turn its investigation results over to the Office of Professional Responsibility for adjudication. And by the way, Carol Baker, Queen of the Minions, points out, the burning of the black church spray-painted with Vote Trump in Greenville, Mississippi, will be investigated by the FBI once they choose a Clinton to blame it on.
God damn it, she's awful, she's terrible, she's a neo-corporatist, neo-liberal, globalist, goddamn! Anything would be better, I mean, Trump!
Wait a minute. Okay, preemptive cowbell. I don't know if you know this, but the FBI investigation, as Carol points out, the FBI investigation of the Clinton Foundation was based on a political hatchet job written by a hack. Well, you know, hacks, right? Called Clinton Cash! You might recall that the Washington Post and the New York Times greedily signed on for publication rights and advance extra special double secret probation access to the materials. Carol points out, I hope they didn't read Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter, the FBI. Gerald, meanwhile, says, the FBI is investigating itself? What could go wrong? Well, I mean, who do you want to have investigate the FBI?
I know. Maybe some of those sweet and innocent people from the secret police over in Russia could do it. We can trust them. Trust us. We're ideologically pure.
Yeah, so there's that. Ten minutes past the hour, and thank you very kindly. In addition to Steve and Ms. Karen and Cletus, Charlie has jumped in, which means that we've only got $150 in fundraising left to go for the evening. And that is much appreciated. It's so nice to keep track with fundraising and not go in a hole. Thank you. Thank you very much. Subject line coming from Steve in New York. I got to have some levity. Steve says, I just realized what unicorn farts sound like. Yeah, Steve? Really? Huh. And Steve says, yeah, I just figured out what unicorn farts sound like. Jill Stein's singing.
She says it all comes back at you and me.
Nope, sorry, can't take much more of that. No. That's more like threat music. That's, you know, that's Pat Boone heavy metal threat stuff. But that's Lee Greenwood singing God Bless the USA. That's what you do, you know, finish fundraising or else I'll play, you know, don't make me do it. Right. Hey, speaking of Carol Baker, it's Carol Baker. What's happening?
Not much. Can you hear me okay?
I hear you great.
Okay, cool. I figured instead of sitting here writing things, trying to make you laugh, I'd just call you and try and make you laugh.
I think I laugh better when it's live.
So, I'm curious, Bob. There's a burning question I have to ask.
Yes? Yes.
How do you really feel about Jill Stein?
I've kind of got a crush. I mean, this is all just because she won't return my calls.
It's her singing in it.
Well, that and the restraining order.
Indeed.
Nah, just. Well, we got a little echo going on, Carol.
I don't know. I don't know what it is. Let me try and turn the sound down.
Okay.
Or I could call you on the iPad and see if that's better.
The iPad might be better. We're kind of echoey right now.
Let me give it a shot.
Okay, let's do. All right, back in a sec. I hate it when I get... And honestly, I'm really more concerned with the Trumpanzees than I am with the unicorn cavalry. I don't know. Can they turn the tide? And it depends on how well the voter suppression works. You know, can they turn the tide in Florida? Can the Trumpanzees win down there? I mean, President Not Sure went down to Florida and campaigned and caused right-wingers to have hissies. I think you're back, Carol.
I think I'm back, too.
And I don't hear me echoing.
Well, that's good.
We win.
You. Well, sometimes the iPad was echoey, so I thought I'd try calling in on the pewter.
And, you know, it's the magic of the internet.
Well, two tin cans and a string. Sometimes one of the cans echoes.
Yeah, well, your tin can's in Hooterville, mine's in West Virginia, and they are connected by the hillbilly internet.
Indeed. So, how about them Cubs?
Yeah, I know. Wasn't that sweet?
I'm sorry, but, you know, I lived in Chicago for 12 years, and I was so happy for them last night. 108 years is a long dry spell.
Well, see, I didn't mention this a couple of nights ago, but Monday night would have been my father's 92nd birthday.
Was he a fan?
And I miss him every day. And he used to tell me how, when he was a little boy, his favorite baseball team was the Cubbies.
Aww.
And he listened, what was it? It was the 1938 World Series, which was the last World Series, I guess, before the 45 World Series that they were in. And his favorite player was the Cubs catcher, a guy named Gabby Hartnett. And I think that was the World Series where Babe Ruth allegedly called his shot.
I don't know. That was just a wee bit before my time.
He would have loved seeing that last night. In fact, I kind of went old school. I listened to it instead of watching it. And by listen to it, that takes some of the old school out of it, because I listened, you know, on the internet, because there's nothing on the AM dial around here anymore. You know, maybe you can get the Skywave from WSB Atlanta, but it's a replay of some right wing gas bag instead of the most historic World Series game, you know, in generations.
Precisely.
So I listened on TuneIn.
The thing about Cubs fans is that the one thing that I learned in Chicago was every year was, well, maybe next year, but they were the most loyal fans. They never turned their back on that team. And the beauty of it was when I lived there back in the late 70s, early 80s, you know, there were no lights in Wrigley Field, so they were all day games.
Yeah.
And there was nothing more fun than playing hooky from work. And going down to Wrigley Field, taking the L train, going down to, you know, getting off at Irving Park Road, going to Wrigley Field. I love to sit right at the end of the first base line because, like you, I'm so white I burn, and the afternoon would be shaded in the afternoon. And just, you know, a beer and a dog, and just to watch the game and smell the grass. And it was just, it's an epic stadium.
And do you know why for so many years there were no lights in Wrigley?
Well, from what I understand, originally the plan was that they were going to put lights in Wrigley Field, and they scrapped the idea because of World War II.
That's different from the story I was told.
What were you told?
I was told that P.K. Wrigley said, listen, this ballpark is in a working class neighborhood, and I don't have any right to keep the neighborhood up all night with my baseball games. Working people got to get some rest. Now, maybe that's a little overly optimistic, but by the same token, another story, you know, the Bears used to play at Wrigley Field.
Yes.
And George Halas wanted to rip out all the seats and cram in tighter seats with less leg room so that they could get more people in so he could make more money. And P.K. Wrigley told him to fuck off.
Yep.
Because people came to the stadium to enjoy themselves. And so that caused a split. And again, this is stories my dad told me. Maybe he was wrong. But as, you know, baseball owners are a pretty shitty lot. But he seemed to have a little bit of regard for P.K. Wrigley.
Well, I'm almost certain that the World War II thing is correct, and then they just kind of never got around to it. And then in the mid-80s, Major League Baseball basically told them that they would never, ever be able to play any postseason games in that stadium unless they put lights in.
Yeah.
And so
they blackmailed really them.
They blackmailed them. But it's still, it's a great neighborhood down there, and it's still a working class neighborhood. And it was fun to sit there and see all the people on the rooftops.
Oh, yeah.
Across the way watching. And you know, the bastards have since put up these giant billboards and things to try and block the view, which I think is patently unfair. I think if those people are going to put up with all the bullshit around the stadium, they ought to get a free game.
Oh, absolutely. But, because money. Because the other side of that is that, if unless I misunderstand, it got to where they were selling rooftop seats, too. And,
so?
And that's, you know, that, no, that pissed them off. I mean, you know, by God, we want part of the gate.
Yeah, well, that part's true. But still, I still thought it was shitty. But I still, it's a great stadium. It's a great town. And people can say whatever they want to about Chicago and everything else. But last night, all I could think of was Harry Carey and Steve Goodman.
Yeah, I wondered. It occurred to me to wonder if maybe somebody had put roses in cubby blue on Steve Goodman's grave.
They should have if they didn't. Because nobody loved the Cubs like Steve Goodman.
And, well, so, but there's another side to this coin, and I don't want to be shitty or anything.
What would that be?
Do you think maybe we could convince the ownership of the Cleveland baseball team that culturally appropriating an entire ethnicity for purposes of capitalistic marketing of your baseball club ain't a good idea? I mean, you think maybe there was some karma at work? I mean, a baby bear doesn't really have anything to bitch about with a baseball team. But, you know, Chief Wahoo, really?
Bear lives matter, Bob.
All bears matter.
All bears matter. That's right. Blue bears, black bears.
Tall bear, rare bears, bear, skinny bear, Smokey the Bear, Yogi Bear.
Polar bears. Sorry. All of a sudden, from Forrest Gump.
Yeah, I don't care. I don't care if the Washington football team never goes to another Super Bowl. And frankly, that baseball club in Cleveland played their hearts out. And they deserve better than to be represented by an ethnic slur.
I agree with that. And they were so magnanimous about the Cubs' win.
Oh, it was graceful. It was bittersweet because, you know, it's not like the Cleveland team has a whole string of World Series victories lately.
No, they do not. It was going to be historic no matter what, but oh God, it was so sweet last night. And it was still, I mean, it just buoyed me through the day today.
Even more so than Kansas City last year.
You know, boy, did I get a twofer or what?
I think if I was a Major League Baseball club, I'd invest in getting you to root for them.
No shit. They should be nicer to me.
Oh, and Gerald has advised us both. Quit telling people who to root for.
Bite me.
Oh, but you know, for once, maybe next year is about the next. It's about another ring and not, you know, the first one. I saw one sentence written over at ESPN that I thought really had kind of it had some oomph to it. Sitting here writing something that no one now alive has been able to write. The Cubs are World Series champions.
That's true. And do you know what it felt good to say as a Cubs fan?
What?
Maybe this year.
Yeah. Or, you know, maybe next year is, hey, let's do it. Let's take two.
Yeah, it has a whole new meaning.
Yeah, I hope it's not another 116 years.
Well, yeah, 108, but I'll tell you, I don't get misty about sports very often, but last night was awesome.
Well, I mean, I thought, you know, with those two, with the two runs scored on the passed ball, every Cubs fan, every Cubs fan had to be going, well, yeah, this makes sense. This is how.
They were like, this is how. It's just never going to be.
I mean, it's because if that had been the difference, the world, the universe would have finally forgotten about Bill Buckner.
No shit.
And Bill Buckner would have been sitting there going, relief!
Exactly. Although, and, you know, I still feel bad for that poor bastard.
Well, I mean, but, you know, that monkey, I guess, got off the back, you know, when the Red Sox did what the Red Sox did. But
that's true.
Still. And so now it's down. By the way, here's a little curiosity. With the Cubs having won the World Series.
Yes.
My beloved West Virginia Mountaineers now get somewhere up near the top of the list of most successful sports teams of any type never to win a championship.
I'm so sorry.
Oh, it's okay. I mean, and you know, mercifully, they took care of my hopes and dreams last Saturday out in, what is it, Stillwater, Oklahoma?
Yes.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm working on a design for a football with handles on it. That's all I can say.
That's good. All right. So aside from basking in the glory of my World Series win, because, you know, all Cubs fans won last night.
Mm-hmm. Oh, baseball won last night. Goodness, really the American way won last night. Even though I just got a note from Marty saying "fuck off" about the fucking Cubs, you and Carol. Marty would be a Giants fan and a very hardcore one.
I know, but come on, nobody can raw dog the Cubs.
Oh no! They're come on, they're sitting there all over Manhattan going, they couldn't have beat the Yankees.
Oh, bullshit. I think they did.
And I don't know. It might have been, well, no. Just let history be what history was. Let
it
be happy with it. And I am. I am.
Exactly. So, yeah. In other news.
Yeah, now that we're done being happy.
Yeah, now that I'm done being happy, let's wade into the swamp. Did you see the news about Sister Clerk Kim Davis?
Yes. And it's all tax-free. The multi-million-dollar grifting operation doesn't want to pay attorney's fees for the people that Kim Davis tried to fuck.
Whose civil rights she violated?
Yes.
Yeah. He said, he told the judge the case was resolved in the legislature and the couples aren't entitled to legal fees. Well, you know what? The case wasn't resolved in the legislature. The case was resolved by the Supreme Court.
And a federal district judge sent her ass to jail for contempt.
That's right. So, yeah, I think when you violate the civil rights of another human being, then and they have to take you to court to get their civil rights that are
well,
owed
that's,
to them?
Well, that's kind of why the attorney's fees provision is in the civil rights statute, to discourage people from depriving people of their civil rights. It's kind of like a punishment.
Exactly.
And I hope that these are some very expensive civil rights.
Well, the legal fees were like $250,000.
Ooh, they're getting off. The Matt Staver's getting off cheap then.
That's what I think.
So, no, and I don't care if they appeal it all the way to the Supreme Court. I want them to pay.
I want them to pay too.
And you know what? If they do appeal it, guess what? Those attorney's fees go on the bill too.
Oh, yes, they do.
And highfalutin federal appeals don't come cheap.
No, they don't. And poor Kim, you know, even Westboro Baptist Church picketed her because she's an adulterer.
Yes, well.
When they're cannibalizing their own, I mean, when the hate groups can't even like each other.
I know. So, you know, really, and of course, let's understand, Kim Davis ain't going to pay a penny of this, and neither is her delightful, wonderful, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing church. But Matt Staver and Liberty Council, who are a tax-free, multi-million-dollar operation, I'd like to see them have to lay off some lawyers out of this.
Me too.
Hey, but while we're talking about religious institutions, Carol.
Yeah.
Have you seen the latest? Well, it's a little school in New York. I don't know that it's a religious institution. It just has a religious name. Jericho Elementary School. You know, Joshua fit the Battle of Jericho. Jericho. Joshua fit the Battle of Jericho, and the walls
and
come
the walls
tumbling
come
down.
Tumbling down.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's an elementary school somewhere in New York. Mm-hmm. And they have a mock presidential election at their school, you know. And I remember when my school did this, you know, my junior high school, it was Ford versus Carter, that kind of thing.
Sure.
And I was Carter. You know, I was pro-Carter. and, you know, I don't even remember how it turned out.
But you were telling people how to vote even then.
You're damn right. I mean, me and Jimmy Carter, we were Southern Baptists together.
There you go.
So they tried to have a mock presidential election at Jericho Elementary School.
Uh-huh.
They had to cancel it.
Why?
Well, because according to fifth grader Miranda Waters, some people were getting angry because some people like Trump and some people like Clinton. Some people think Clinton's not good. Some think Trump's not good. So there's a lot of arguments going on, and I don't like that. What it boils down to, according to the principal, is that the little baby Trumpansies started chanting Trump, 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 and repeated what the president or the principal referred to as negative rhetoric about minorities.
Oh, were they screaming USA?
That's probably the mildest part of it.
I'm sure.
The school principal, Glenn Rogers, said teachers have said they've heard some kids in the cafeteria chanting Trump, 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 or saying they don't want Muslims here. I mean, kids often repeat what they hear on the TV or news, but it doesn't mean it's okay. We have a diverse community here. We want all our students to feel valued.
Those kids are repeating what they hear at home.
Ta-da! You know,
they're not watching the news.
My kids had a delightfully old school elementary and middle school teacher. He has since passed on. But he would look at his students, and he would tell them, it all begins in the home. And this was if they hadn't gotten their homework done, or if they were beating on each other, or being, you know, otherwise, by any other means, the unruly little heathens that middle schoolers will be. And he'd say, it all begins in the home. And he also insisted that they do things like learning, you know, to speak English and write it and be grammatically correct. And, mm-hmm. you know, he was kind of harsh. But, by God, those children actually learned something.
Yeah.
And to this day, any one of four children can look at, and now one of them's looking at her own kids going, it all begins in the home. And it does. They're not repeating. Well, I mean, maybe they heard it on TV, but they heard it on TV because their parents, you know, have Fox News on.
Exactly. I guess I was really lucky. I was another victim of public education. And you can see how I turned out. And I remember that PBS... The PBS documentary came on about the brown-eyed, blue-eyed experiment.
Yes.
Remember that? And it was an Iowa school teacher who did it. And her name's Jaden Elliott, and she is, of course, retired and now does the same type of experiments with grown adults. And they've got videos all over YouTube of her. The last interview that I did on my radio show was with Jaden Elliott. And I'll tell you, she's a tough lady, but I love her so much. I watched that documentary on television with my father, and it opened up a whole conversation about race and inequality and prejudice and all those things. And then I went to school, and the teachers assigned it as homework to watch it. And we had that conversation at school. And this was in Iowa in the 60s.
Yes.
So, you know, you understand I'm a victim here.
Well, yeah. And let's see, it was the blue-eyeds who got discriminated against, right?
Well, they both got discriminated against before it was over with, because it was the first day the brown-eyed kids were discriminated against. The second day, the blue-eyed kids were discriminated against. Or it went on for a couple of days back and forth so that everybody got to experience it, what it was like to be treated that way. And then it, again, opened up a broader discussion for her students. And she brought them back 25 years later to discuss, you know, their experience and how it shaped their lives. And it was funny because my summer intern mentioned her at work one day, and I turned around and I looked at him and I was like, I know her. And he was like, you do? And he said, because in his school, they were, in a freshman sociology class, they were discussing how she had emotionally damaged those children.
Oh, please.
And I was like, I don't know, Jack, I lived through it. Do I look emotionally damaged? And he just laughed. And I said, whoever told you that is lying. You don't, you know, so they were taught a lesson at a tender age and learned to walk in someone else's shoes. And this is bad. How?
I think we need to acknowledge that any teacher who tried this now would be fired summarily.
Well, it did not go well for her either,
no.
I might add, because her parents were... her parents owned a business, a restaurant in town, and they ended up having to close their business over it because people were so upset. And she continued that experiment with every class that she had until she retired. And there were parents who would fight to get their kids in her class, and parents who went to school and said, that woman will not teach my children. And it happened every year until she retired. But the school allowed her to continue.
And by the way, speaking of other things Iowegian.
Yes.
I haven't spent a lot of time on the killing of the two police officers there.
Yes. You mean the white guy who lived to tell the tale?
The white guy who was arrested without incident, no gunplay.
When it's something.
Yeah. And the curious quiet that I've seen thus far, not a whole lot of Blue Lives Matter folks out there, not a whole lot of All Lives Matter folks out there, because this isn't the kind of murderer that you holler All Lives Matter about.
Exactly. Well, it's not like he got Burger King or anything.
Oh God. Yeah, I wonder the trial's going on. I wonder what he's getting for lunch every day in South Carolina.
I don't know, but it ain't bread and water.
No, but speaking of South Carolina.
Yes.
The trial that's taking place across the street.
Are you talking about the Walter Scott trial?
Yes.
With the
Michael Slager.
With the nearly all-white jury?
Yes. But
what
the,
kick of white?
Well, but the prosecutor did at least note that Michael Slager had, messed with the scene of the crime.
Yeah.
By moving the taser, he said Walter Scott came after him with the taser and he shot him when he turned. He said he ran away with my taser. And then the prosecutor, Scarlett Wilson, said she pointed at him and said, he moved the taser. On the other hand, playing to the white folks on the jury, Andrew Savage, who is his pettifogger, said, why did Walter Scott not choose to respect the request to stay where he was? That's something I hope you consider when you evaluate the evidence in this case. He didn't just run. He physically and forcefully resisted to the extent that they were both a-fighting on the ground.
That wasn't what the video showed at all.
No. Not even a little bit.
So you get to just make shit up in court?
It's argument, and counsel gets a little bit of leeway.
Yeah, but there's this thing called evidence. And we got it.
Yeah, I know. Video evidence? You mean like the kind of video evidence that shows a black man being choked to death and the cop winds up getting away with it?
Yeah.
That kind of video evidence? Kind of,
yeah. By this poor, terrified bastard hiding in the bushes. Yeah.
Meanwhile, also in South Carolina, a lot of people move to South Carolina for the climate.
Yeah.
I don't know that I'm so crazy about this climate.
I know what climate you're talking about.
According to Reuters, a registered sex offender was arrested today down in South Carolina, Stan. Because back in late August, a woman was reported missing. Kayla Brown was recently found in Spartanburg County, northeast of Greenville, South Carolina. Police were searching a big parcel of property when they heard banging noises from inside a storage container.
Right.
Which they then opened and found Kayla Brown chained in it like a dog. She'd been held captive inside the container for 2 months.
Oh, my.
Her 32-year-old boyfriend remains missing. According to Brown, there may be 4 bodies buried on the property.
Oh, my.
Meanwhile, Todd Kohlhepp, aged 45, was arrested. He's a registered sex offender from Arizona, Stan.
Right.
And he is presently incarcerated. And the police investigator, Spartanburg County Sheriff Chuck Wright, said he's currently incarcerated. We're trying to get all this sorted out and figure out what we're going to charge him with. One of the charges will be kidnapping. It could be murder. It could be a number of things. I remember when a couple of years ago when a man of color was dragged to death in South Carolina. And
I remember that, too.
And one of their sheriffs said something along the lines of, we're analyzing the evidence right now to see if this is a hate crime.
Yeah. I don't know. Let's ask the dead guy. No, wait.
Yeah, not a climate that I find particularly salubrious.
Me neither.
Let's don't.
Did you see Melanoma's press conference?
Oh, you mean the one where she bogarted some more language?
Yeah. She ending social media. I'm sorry. I have to do this right. ending social media bullying would be my focus as first lady. Then we go after Moose and Squirrel.
Only it
my
gets
first
worse.
My first act as first lady will be to confiscate all of Donald's mobile devices.
It's getting worse. At least earlier she was plagiarizing, Michelle Obama.
Again?
No, now she's plagiarizing Marla Maples, the second wife of Benito.
Sorry,
Cheeto.
What did she say?
She just lifted Marla's words. Dream it, you could become it. Blah. You know. It's apparently straight out of Marla's book. Who knew that Marla wrote a book, but she did. Was it Marla who told the world that the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini keeps a copy of Hitler's speeches on his night table for a little light reading when he wakes up?
I don't know. I assume that all the wives knew that, so it's hard to tell.
I didn't know if that was Ivana or Marla, but yeah, that line, dream it, you could become it. Is straight from Marla's book.
Oh, I was assuming that, I didn't see all of it. I was assuming that she said something like, on cyberbullying, when they go low, we go high.
I'm going to leave that alone for a very good reason. Think Progress notes that the speech was absurd for a couple of obvious reasons. Her husband's presidential campaign has elevated online trolls and cyberbullies to unprecedented heights.
Exactly.
His legion of adoring trolls have bullied journalists, rigged online polls in his favor, amplified his unfounded conspiracy theories, espoused hateful, threatening views, and Trump has himself retweeted white supremacist websites, memes, links, stories.
Yeah. Well, apparently she's not following Donald on Twitter.
But apparently she did a profile that was published on GQ last spring. I remember reading it. And that's where she said, I don't control my fans, but I don't agree with what they're doing. I understand what you mean, but there are people out there who maybe went too far. The journalist provoked them.
The journalist provoked them?
Provoked them, yes.
You mean like Katie Tour?
By writing journalism. Is how you provoke. I just like saying pro-woke. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, are you up for... How many... I mean, you were around for this. Carol, how many weeks did we spend? It's like a couple of times I felt like the program was just becoming the Bundy update last January. I mean, night after night after night, there was more, you know, more Bundy bullshit.
Yes.
Are you ready for another one?
Well, didn't they promise they're going to do it again?
Yeah, because they have. I mean, they promised they're going to do it again. Ryan
Good
Bundy.
Thing, let him go.
Ryan Bundy, who is still sitting in jail, said, because see, there's this new national monument in Nevada that Kenyan Muslim usurper. You slurped power to declare because, you know, he's a Kenyan Muslim usurper who's using the powers that other presidents have used, except they got to because they was white.
But that is different.
Ryan Bundy, in cooling his heels in the stir, said, the land does not belong to the government. The land belongs to the people of Clark County, not to the people of the United States.
Wrong.
Not the sharpest knife in the drawer, Ryan Bundy. I guess by his words, he just personally seceded Clark County from both Nevada and, you know, the United States.
don't know. Wasn't it a Republican who created the National Park System?
Would you be talking about Teddy Roosevelt?
Yeah, that was him.
Right. And 71% of people in Nevada support designating Gold Butte as a national monument. A whole bunch of elected officials have also endorsed it. Tribal nations have endorsed it. Businesses have endorsed it. Community and recreation groups have endorsed it. But, no, the Bundy Bunch may decide to invade it. Can we treat them like the government is treating the Standing Rock people this time?
You're funny.
Hey.
No.
Because that got nasty again.
I saw the video of
again with the rubber bullets, with the gassing.
While they were in ice cold water?
Yes. Praying.
Yeah. Bloodthirsty shit like that.
I mean, if you didn't know better, I'll get email for this. If you didn't know better, you'd almost swear that elements of our law enforcement have been studying under the Israelis.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's only because they have.
Uh-huh.
Because the Standing Rock people are getting treated like Palestinians. Well, I mean, we haven't gotten around to the precision-guided high-explosive munitions being targeted onto six-month-old babies' cribs yet, but, you know, this is just a warm-up.
Yeah.
Morton County Sheriff Kyle Kirchmeier said, "Receiving permission and precise guidance from the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers was uplifting today. This simple message gave a clear-cut order to execute a plan to remove unlawful actors and prevent further unlawful actions." Because people were unlawfully building a little bridge.
The bastards.
Yeah.
Red Lives Matter. Nope,
sorry. It just doesn't have a ring to it, does it?
Doesn't, actually.
But, I'm scared to death that sooner or later these bastards are going to start murdering people.
Well, listen, they've got snipers up on bluffs, and nobody's ever going to convince me that they've got rubber bullets in their guns.
Hey, forgive me if I'm wrong, but I don't think sniper rifles, I don't think rubber bullets are much good in a sniper rifle.
They're not.
Because then it's not much of a sniper rifle.
Indeed.
Who is it they think's going to start shooting at them? I mean, how is this not getting, day by day, a little closer to being Wounded Knee, a little closer to being Sand Creek?
A little closer to Kent State.
Well, I was thinking about the 19th century Wounded Knee, you know.
I know, but I'm sitting there thinking about we're going to get to see it on live television before this is over.
But I don't know, because see, the for-profit media don't want to chime in on this because Dakota Access, a wholly owned subsidiary of Energy Transfer Partners, well, they don't really want this seen.
Well, they don't want it seen, but I'll tell you what. They've got, 5 days left before they have no excuse for not covering it? 5 days. Okay, they can use the election as the excuse, Bob, for ignoring this story. But, so, they're going to have to start killing people before then.
Silly female. After 5 days, if Trump loses, the next 2 months will be, "Poor Donald Trump, what will he do now?" Tune in next week. Right?
Well, you know, I've already named my picks for the for Trump TV.
That's true. That's true. But this is interesting. The Bismarck Tribune, which is a newspaper out there.
Yes.
They couldn't help themselves. They published an article on Monday. Companies showed lack of transparency in reporting artifacts discovery in days leading up to pipeline conflict. So it turns out that the Dakota Access people are dirty because they actually identified 4 stone cairns as well as a host of other artifacts as they built the pipeline in Morton County. And they did not immediately notify state regulators. Now, it may be entirely immaterial, Carol, that they didn't, because state regulators might just not give a fuck. But they didn't.
But you realize that that's an impediment to, you know, pure capitalism.
Well, yeah. And that's what this is about. You know, I pointed out on Facebook that the only difference between, say, the Bundy Bunch and the Standing Rock people is that the Bundy Bunch were a bunch of white privileged assholes invading a federal government installation belonging to we the people, whereas the Standing Rock people are people of ethnicity other than white, who were protecting their only source of clean, potable drinking water.
Yes.
And I pointed out, you know, the only real difference was, you know, white people. Mm-hmm. That and capitalism. And immediately somebody jumped on my Facebook page and said, no, it's because the Bundy Bunch had guns. They only respect guns. Yeah. I'm like, God damn. Well, this way lies madness. But meanwhile, John Eagle Sr., who is the Tribal Historic Preservation Officer for the Standing Rock people.
Yes.
Said, ordinarily, upon discovery of something like that, like those cairns, the other artifacts, he's supposed to be notified immediately. He never found out about it until Forum News Service said, oh, by the way, you know they found these things. No, I didn't. He went on to note, North Dakota State Historic Preservation Office has closed their doors to the tribe. They don't return my phone calls. They didn't respond to my letter. There's no open communication.
There's a shock.
Mm-hmm.
How's that for transparency?
Right, but this is capitalism at its, because remember, the Bundy Bunch, they wanted to open up the Malheur Refuge to mining and timbering. Huh?
Oh, yeah.
They weren't trying to keep it from being mined or timbered. So, you know, capitalism's not gonna inveigh against them, because capitalism would love to mine and timber the Malheur National Bird Sanctuary. Because, you know, who needs birds, really?
We do.
I mean, if you can't eat them.
Bees.
I mean, did you ever try to eat a blue jay? There's just not a lot there.
No.
I mean, there's not a good part of a cardinal. And, I mean, you can't even make a snack out of a sparrow. I mean, did you ever taste bald eagle? Tastes a lot like spotted owl.
It doesn't.
But and here, the part that kind of just blows my mind is the fact that President Not Sure has asked. That the pipeline be rerouted.
Yeah. Because we all know that saying pretty please is the way to get what you want.
Barack Obama.
Doesn't that always work?
Yeah, he said the Corps is evaluating whether the pipeline, which has sparked the largest Native American protest movement in years, could be rerouted to address indigenous concerns of damage to sacred sites. As a general rule, my view is that there is a way for us to accommodate sacred lands of Native Americans. Meanwhile, Dakota Access. Fuck you.
There is a way to accommodate them. Stay the fuck off of them.
Yeah, and but see, I don't want, and I want to be clear about this, and I could never dream of speaking for, nor would I even try to. I don't want that pipeline rerouted.
Well, I don't either.
I want that pipeline not built.
Bob, the point is the pipeline was rerouted. It was supposed to go through the edge of Bismarck.
Oh, but white people.
White people didn't want it there, so it got rerouted through Standing Rock.
Funny that. But there's something else out of this, and I'm quite serious about this. This is a little bit of storytelling, so please bear with me.
Mm-hmm.
Several years ago, and I guess by way of preface, we should note that I bear no great amount of love for the so-called Big Greens. But several years ago, we attended, my family did, and a few others, Netroots Nation in Las Vegas.
Yeah.
And they, you know, they've got all kinds of panel discussions there. So they had a panel discussion about the future of the environmental movement, Carol.
Yes.
Of course, they included no one on the panel who was actually part of a grassroots environmental movement. Instead, they had the president of, like, the Sierra Club. And they had Majora Carter, who had become a great luminary in the environmental movement. And they had a couple of others. And they all sat there talking to each other in their big green ways about environmentalism.
Right.
And two or three of us were sitting back there just sort of going, well, this is kind of a snooze fest. They don't know shit about anybody's problem that has an environmental issue. But then came the statement, and I'm pretty sure it came from Michael Brune of the Sierra Club. Listen, the environmental movement is never going to be, and I'm paraphrasing, it's never going to be a great motivating factor like the civil rights movement. And I remember looking at the people who were there with me and going, did he just, and he just, and I went, don't get it. Because you see, the environmental, and you know this, the environmental movement is a civil rights movement.
Of course it is.
If you cannot provide water to your children that is not poisoned with lead in Flint, Michigan, and your child loses IQ points as a result of that lead consumption,
mm-hmm.
That's a civil rights violation. Because one has a civil right not to have the one's bodily integrity negatively impacted by some goddamn Republicans' desire to have smaller fucking government. If your mama or grandma or grandpa or 5-year-old dies early from breathing mountaintop removal poisons that come boiling down off after the explosions, those people have had their civil rights violated because dead.
Nice.
But no. The exalted, noble mucky-mucks, the serene, majestic graciousness of the big greens sat there and said,
Well, you know, the environmental movement is never going to have the impact that the civil rights movement did.
I can't help thinking that the Standing Rock are kind of putting the lie to that. Because there's people coming from all over the country out there.
They are.
And it's not, and a lot of them, a lot of the first ones were other indigenous people. Oak Flats people from the Apache Nation in Arizona. Ojibwe people from the upper Midwest. Muskogee people from the Southeast and Oklahoma. But lo and behold, more people are beginning to flow in there. Because Stand with Standing Rock doesn't just, it's not just something to put on a t-shirt. It's a mindset, and it's a recognition. Yes, it is. Because if that pipeline goes through, it's not just Standing Rock that's at hazard. It is everybody in Iowa, North Dakota, Illinois,
mm-hmm.
Nebraska.
I sent you the map. Did you see it?
Yeah. Who stand to be devastated when, not if, that thing goes sideways.
Oh, it is a win.
Well, I mean, it's damn sure been when twice in Shelby County, Alabama, hasn't it?
It has.
I mean, first, the Colonial Pipeline leaked 250,000 or more gallons of gasoline. And then it blew up.
Yeah, well.
Then it blew up. And killed somebody. And burned up five other people. It's not if, it's when.
Bob, there's a price to pay for profits.
Yeah, and the funny thing is, the people who wind up paying that price, well...
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know.
And the funny thing is, nobody... And, you know, every now and then we take these congressional spasms where we'll haul some executive from some pharma company or what bank or something in front of some Senate or House committee, and they'll ask them questions, and maybe a Democrat will sit there and get kind of tough with them and make them squirm a little bit.
You mean like Elizabeth Warren and the head of Wells Fargo?
Yeah, exactly. And that's the price you pay for getting all that money. I mean, you really don't do much as a CEO. I mean, you're not working nearly as hard as, say, the janitor who cleans up the joint at the end of the day.
No.
But you get paid all that money because sometimes you have to sit down and let politicians pretend that they actually give a fuck. You know, like when Richard Shelby, the Republican from Alabama, said, "You're making this awful hard here. By God, you've made the Democrats and the Republicans agree about something, you some bitch." But one of these days, and I know it's just, other people have pornographic fantasies about swinging from chandeliers and things like that. I have a fantasy of seeing, some Democratic member of the House or Senate look at maybe the head of Energy Transfer Partners.
Mm-hmm.
And say, would you be willing to guarantee with your life that this pipeline will never leak?
Of course it will. And of course they would never say that. Accidents happen, Bob. It's just an accident.
And yet,
you and I call an accident.
Well, they call that tax. They call that an accounting write-off, or a write-down. But see, here's the funny thing: if you go over to the Colonial Pipeline Company's website, unless they've scrubbed it since then, you'll find a statement. all accidents are preventable.
Of course they are. That was the word I was going to use.
So, in other words, when an accident happens with a pipeline, at least according to the folks at Colonial, it could have been prevented.
Mm-hmm.
Except for the fact that they didn't quite give enough of a damn. I mean, it kind of tells us something, doesn't it?
Yep.
And with all of these, with all of these pipelines, Keystone XL, this one, what happened, Colonial, what have you? There's always going to be the essential problem that in the decision making process, you only get one chance to get it right. Because nobody is ever, nobody at the Department of Energy, nobody at FERC or FARC or whatever is ever going to order a pipeline be dug up and dismantled.
No.
And so from a systemic standpoint, what we have to come to realize is that there is a presumption that is damn near unrebuttable and unchallengeable even, that things like this pipeline should go through regardless of any potential consequences to human life.
Sure.
And that means that there has got to be a systemic change in how we go about analyzing and permitting them.
Yep.
And then, you know, the fact that this goddamn pipeline's running through unceded territory, yeah, that's got a little bit of meaning. Oh, by the way, we got a note from Ron in the soon-to-be-frozen north.
Yes.
Ron said, just thinking about the law enforcement position in Standing Rock and wondering how things would have worked out in Lexington and Boston Harbor if the local constabulary had the equivalent of a SWAT arsenal at their disposal. Oh, and those insurrectionists like Adams, Franklin, Jefferson, and Monroe would have been wearing ankle bracelets, balls and chains, and forfeited their estates to pay legal fees. We would now all be part of Canada with health care and leaders with good hair. I would note, just for the sake of accuracy, that, as I understand it, recruiting the pipeline away from, rerouting the pipeline away from tribal lands would involve something around laying an additional 20 miles of pipeline. The cost would not be insignificant, but it would represent coffee and donut money to the pipeline companies. Yeah. But it becomes a larger issue if you talk about rerouting the pipeline off of unceded treaty land.
Yep.
And of course, in that map that you provided me from Huffington Post, the hash mark dotted line doesn't go through unceded treaty territory.
No, it does not.
One would think,
but, you know, we've talked, you and I have talked before about the Ogallala Aquifer. You know, that it's a shallow water table that provides something like 82% of the potable drinking water for the High Plains.
We might think of it as a vast underground sea.
Yes. When the world's running out of water, you know, we've got it.
So maybe best not piss in it.
Well, you know, call me crazy, but I think it's a bad idea. But right now, the aquifer is at risk for over-extraction, for pollution, fracking. And, of course, the Keystone Pipeline goes right through it. What would happen if seven states lost 82% of their potable drinking water? And I'm talking about South Dakota, Wyoming, Colorado, Kansas, New Mexico, Oklahoma, and Texas.
Well, then they just have to buy it from Nestle. Like capitalist Jesus wants them to.
Exactly.
But what would happen to all those states if they couldn't get no gasoline? Of course, that's bullshit, because this isn't, and this needs to be sort of maybe borne out and hammered on a little bit. There's not enough oil going to flow through that pipeline to even if we could get it all at once from the hellscape up there where they're fracking it out of North Dakota. There's not enough oil there to fuel this country for 6 months. That's why it has to get on a pipeline, because where's it gonna terminate, Carol?
Doesn't it terminate in the Gulf?
Or maybe somewhere along the Mississippi River where it can be loaded on barges and sent south and get on boats and go to places like, oh, I don't know, China?
Oh, yeah.
Because, see, the anus mouth orange thing, he can't hold one of his Klan rallies without hollering, China, China, China. And they're taking our jobs. But he never says anything about the fact that they're buying our oil. You know, we've become wait a minute, the number one oil producer in the world. Only we're still paying.
He certainly outsources enough jobs there.
Yeah, I mean, and yet, you know, oh, I guess as compared to the rest of the world, paying $2.29 a gallon's probably getting off cheap. But
is that how much it is where you are?
Yes.
The $1.89 here?
Well, that's because poor people have to carry the state of West Virginia on and the wealthy part of West Virginia on our backs.
Oh, there you go.
Because coal keeps lights on.
Why do you hate America, Bob?
Because I'm a commie.
That's my boy.
Yep. Meanwhile, Asa says, you know, when you say the pipeline is running through unceded land, I can imagine some dumbass Trumpansy oil exec sitting there saying, well, hell, let's seed the damn land and get this standoff over with. Bring me some seed corn.
Yes.
Jesus God.
He's got a point.
These sleazy, slimy bastards. They're working as fast as they can to destroy all of the artifacts that they can. So that, and see, I've got I'm a little bit familiar with this practice. There are people out there, Carol. I don't know if you realize this or not. You probably do. Come on, there are people out there called contract archaeologists.
Mm-hmm.
And in the world of academic archaeologists, they don't get a lot of respect.
No.
Because contract archaeologists are hired by people like pipeline companies and oil companies and, say, coal companies that want to blow up mountains. And they say, all right, we got a permit process going on here. And so we're going to have to include a statement within the meaning of the Native Graves Repatriation Act to the extent that there ain't no native artifacts on that mountain we want to blow all the fuck elution.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to pay you a nice little bit of money, and just go out and stomp around a little bit and come back here and write me a report that says ain't shit there, ain't nobody ever set foot on it, ain't no human beings touched it, there ain't no artifacts, there ain't so much as a fucking arrowhead, okay? Can you do that for me, son? And he says, yes,
sir. Write a big enough check to say anything.
Will the check clear? Goddamn right. Then I can write you that report.
There you go.
Because if you talk to the old timers down in southern West Virginia, they'll tell you every mountain that's been blown up has rock shelters with evidence of, oh, you know, 5,000-6,000 years worth of habitation on them.
You mean since Jesus?
Since before Jesus.
There. Oh, come on. There was nothing before Jesus.
3,000 years BJ.
I'm not going to touch that one with a...
Well, you know, I floated it up over the rim for you. If you don't want to jam at home, it's not my fault.
No,
we'll just let it bounce harmlessly away from the backboard.
Listen, I already set I already set office protocol back 20 years today. the boss brought these T-shirts in that he brought back from Mexico for everybody that were have our company logo on them. And the biggest one he brought back was, I think, a large or an extra large. And I just looked at it and laughed. And he goes, what? And I was like, you want me and both the boobs to fit in there?
No es muy grande.
So I went and tried it on for him. And after we all had a good laugh, I said, yeah, you all just think I'm nothing but a pretty brain. Eyes down here, fellas. My secretary just spit up laughing. She was like, that wasn't very politically correct, but it was funny.
Yeah, see, and if it wasn't for the plea agreement, you could look at him and say, hey, Buster, next time you come back, just bring the good estate tequila, will you? Never mind the T-shirts.
He did bring me back a really cool gift, though.
Oh?
He brought me back this really cool, it's a Lexan, like, stand-up plaque that sits in this wooden rack, and underneath of it are these LED lights, and you plug it in, and it's got the Cubs logo, and it's got my name underneath of it.
Oh, nice!
You plug it in, it lights up blue underneath. It is the coolest thing. And I was like, how did you know? And he goes, you never shut up about the Cubs.
Well, next time he goes down there, tell him you would like him to bring you back a figurine of Xochitl Quetzal.
Okay.
She was the Mexica deity of love and flowers.
Okay.
Like, kind of, she was the Venus of you know.
Okay, but you're going to have to tell me how to spell it.
Should I do that, like, in a separate communication?
Yeah, because we don't have that kind of time here.
Xochiquetzal. And see, when you look at him and say, yeah, well, that's great, but I'd love to have a figurine of Xochitl Quetzal, he'll do one of those W.C. Fields, not a double, but a triple take. You know, what? And, yeah, no, really, Xochitl Quetzal, you know. And, you know, if you're into it, you can, you know, you can bring me Shippy Totec while you're at it. And then you can look at him and say, do you have a little time to talk about Shippy Totec's plan for your life? Because he doesn't want to be part of Shippy Totec's plan for his life.
He's a diehard Catholic boy.
Yeah, but it's the Catholicism that's steeped in, you know, about 5,000 years worth of, yeah.
True.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, now that I've gloated about the Cubs, done my melanoma impression, talked about my boobs on the radio, my life is complete.
Yeah, your work here is done, Carol. I mean,
my work here is done. I mean, man, this was a full conversation here, buddy.
We don't mail it in.
No, we don't. But I'm gonna go find some food. It's been a long week, but I just missed you guys. And
You're gonna go foraging in Greater Hooterville?
I'm gonna go foraging in my kitchen.
Oh, okay. I do have to ask though. How's young Aristotle?
Aristotle is fine. He is the funniest kid. For somebody who is as wise as he is, he has a very unusual sense of age and time. He's convinced I have one foot in the grave, Bob.
And the other on the banana peel, yes.
Yeah, and I'm like the oldest person on earth, and I was trying to explain to him the other day that I might be gone for a while because I'm going to probably have to go home soon to take care of my mother's final affairs. She's not going to last too much longer. And he looked at me. I mean, his mouth dropped open, and he looked at me incredulously, and he goes, your mother is still alive? And I just burst out laughing. It was like, it was after the day.
Yes, young Padawan, and she's 732.
I'm sure, I wish I had thought to say that.
You do need to salt in young Padawan here and there.
That kid, he just kills me. But he makes my life better.
Well, I enjoy reading your accounts of him. Did he get it? I want the update. Did he get the birthday present?
He got the birthday present. I got him a digital camera. and I got him a journal, and I promised him that once a month we're gonna go on an adventure, and that's his birthday present. We're gonna go on an adventure. I'm gonna give him like 3 choices and let him pick.
Oh, how much room do you have to negotiate distance wise?
I'd say, given that he's not my child. Probably,
like museums in Kansas City, that kind of thing.
Yeah, 100 miles.
Because boy, I tell you what, I was gonna say, lots of doors would open if you could trek east and show him the Winston Churchill Memorial in the United States.
I'm going to show him as much stuff as I can humanly show him. There's a lot of things around here that are really cool.
Oh, yes. No, absolutely.
I mentioned to him that I had never been to the Truman Library, and they're going for school this year. And he goes, yeah. He goes, he said, we're going to go. He goes, but I'll go back with you. He goes, I'll be your tour guide. And I said, all right.
This young man has promise.
He does. He has promise and God, buckets full of sass, and that's what I love about him.
And he's fallen in with you instead of some trumpansy, which means that he has a thinking future ahead of him, which makes me feel good.
You know what I really wanted to give him for his birthday, don't you?
No, what?
Adoption papers.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, you know, you can do that after he's 14.
Oh, no. He's a pistol, though, but he makes my life better. I'm going to keep writing about him.
Do please. And we've got a recommendation from Hoghead in the chat room. The Nelson Art Gallery is pretty fine, too.
We're going to go to the Nelson Atkins Art Museum. Definitely. Definitely.
Very nice.
For sure.
You're doing the work of the angels there, Carol. But you know that.
Trust me. I get more out of it than he does, I think. I'm absolutely convinced.
Well, you have a lovely evening. Good luck in the wilds of the Baker kitchen foraging for something to eat.
Yes.
You know, a can of warm sauerkraut's good on an evening like this.
I don't know. I'd be happy with a bowl of cereal at this point. I'm just too tired to cook.
Bring on the Fruit Loops.
But I actually have milk. Probably cinnamon, those cinnamon graham things.
I have to admit, I've developed a thing for cinnamon life.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's good stuff.
But goddamn, that stuff's priced daily, just like gold.
I know. That's why I buy the Malt-O-Meal cheap version.
Yeah, the plastic bag instead of the cardboard box.
There you go.
Of course, I've moved into grits season, Carol.
I'm a gourmet.
I'm into grits now, so. Sometimes I have pimento cheese grits with the pimento cheese from over there at Secret Sandwich, and sometimes it's just butter and salt, and sometimes that's just fine.
Yeah, no, I can't do grits.
You're not pulling your hillbilly card.
My mother may have been a southerner, and she loved her grits, but not this kid.
Never quite made a convert out of you. Oh, well.
Couldn't do it. I used to hold my nose and gag him down, but that's about it.
Well, enjoy your Cinnamon Toast Crunch.
I shall.
Off brand.
I shall. No food porn for me tonight, sorry.
That's okay. They still make those cat head biscuits out there somewhere, so I'm sure we'll hear about those sooner or later.
I'm sure they do. Well, can
you,
I tell the horn
but you make says? You make better ones, right?
I probably do. Anyway, y'all be good givers.
Thank you, and thank you for leading the way. Have a good night, Carol.
And on that note, I'll send you $50 tonight. How would that be?
Oh, bless your heart. Bless your heart, because that'll get us up to halfway done tonight.
There you go. And then and I'll even make you a deal. If they'll pony up another 50, I'll double it.
Oh, okay. So it's two to make one? Or
two to make one.
Something like that.
And we're done.
All right, thank you, Carol. Have a lovely evening.
You too.
All right, bye now.
Later, Gator.
So I guess, the one and only Carol Baker calling live from Hooterville. So there's a challenge on the table, officially now. Carol's going to pony up $50 one way or the other, which will take us to $100 on fundraising for the evening. Ah, but then, and here's where it gets interesting. If, in the next 31 minutes and a few seconds, somebody ponies up, or some collection of people pony up another $50, 5 at 10, 10 at 5, 1 at 50, 2 at 25, etc., 1 at 20, the other at 30, 2 at 25, did I do the 2 at 25 part? I'm just showing off ciphering because I can. Then Carol will put another 50 into the pot, and we'll be done with fundraising for this Thorn in the Side Thursday, the third day of November 2016. Because there's always bills need paying. There really are. It's not a joke. Lines are open if you want to participate in conversation radio. You just got a master class in what that sounds like. 304-663-4676. 304-663-HORN. That's the stress line. The other line is 304-574-8178. And then Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, from anywhere on the planet. But you know that, right? And so just to remind people, I guess for election night coverage, I mean, we're not going to have any returns. At best, we're probably only going to have things like, threats by Trumpanzees, attempts at voter suppression, things like that. You know, by 6 o'clock on next Tuesday evening, yeah, we'll probably have stories like that, but that's about it. And by that's about it, I mean, we won't have any results to talk about or anything. But we're going to do, assuming you're interested, and I mean, write this down on your calendar right now. And, you know, if you've never participated before, then it would be a great night to jump in on the front porch and just tell us what you're feeling. Expand the voice of the community. And we'll start that, you know, we'll just come right out of the gate with that on Tuesday. If you do have something to report, something you've observed or something you've seen or something you've heard, by all means be part of it. So that's what I'm hoping for on Election Tuesday, which is 5 days away. 5 days away. I saw a clip from Benito Cheeto earlier today saying, we're only 5 days from making America great again. And I had a cold chill run up my spine, because I know how he defines that. Oh, my God, in the not-quite-frozen north, it's Ron. What's happening, Ron?
Well, I'm just sitting here waiting for it to start snowing. And I've got the order in for my snow tires, and a bit of cognitive dissonance. I played golf yesterday, and it was almost 70 degrees.
Wait, in the same place?
Yes. Mercurial, I think, is the word that we're looking for.
Might we also add in erratic?
Yea, verily. Yeah. But it is fall in Canada, so...
Is it in the sandbox? Do they have seasons over there?
Oh, yeah. Right now, it's what they call the beautiful season of fall. It was, when I was there last week, it was between 85 to 92 in that range. And they thought it was just lovely, and it was compared to August.
Yeah, probably walking around in down jackets, the locals were.
No, they're saving that for January, February, and March, where it's in the low to mid-70s.
Freezing. Got it. Again with the chills.
It's all relative. But from a Canadian point of view, it was damned fine. It was good weather.
And you didn't get screwed over by Air Canada this time?
No, this time they did everything fine. I took a completely different bag with me this time. one that did not say Air Canada's brand of luggage on the side of it.
So as not to piss off the aggrieved baggage handlers?
Yeah. Yeah. And everything worked out fine. Spent a week there, got a happy client, came home, physically well-rested. By mid-afternoon, my brain's still mush, but there are some that would say that's not an uncommon situation.
But, I mean, this was probably your quickest ever trip to and from, wasn't it?
No, always do a week. Fly on the Saturday, get back on the Saturday. But the trip back was 19 hours, I think, of which I slept 8. Got home, I was awake for about 7 hours, slept for 11, awake until the next night until 8:30, slept for another 12. So physically, I'm fine.
So now that come on the homeward run, you leave Abu Dhabi and go to what, London?
Nope, fly direct, 14 hours.
Whoa, what's the? I gotta wonder, what's the route like?
This trip, we flew north over Iran, over Russia, passed east of Moscow, came down north of Iceland, across the upper third of Greenland, into Labrador, and straight into Toronto. Going out, we were much further south from that, but it all depends on wind and all the rest of it. And they were within 2 minutes of schedule, so I can't argue. And nobody shot at us going over Iran.
It's not the shot at over Iran part that I'm. It's the over Russia part, you know, because they've proven themselves. I realize we're just being mean to poor little big bad Vladdy Daddy, but they've proven themselves to be a little trigger happy.
Yeah, but I got some tin foil from the steward, and I put it over my head when I was asleep, so I was safe from all the emanations of commie influence coming from down below. And I figured they wouldn't shoot at us directly. They would just try to do that mind-influencing thing. And I got home, and I can't detect any more socialist bent than I had before I left.
Yeah, but you were a full-on commie because you're up there in Canada with your commie health care and your commie government.
Well, I'd like to tell you I feel guilty about that.
But you'd be lying.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. From time to time, you have proven yourself quite adept at being the horn's designated bourbon taster.
Yes, sir. I try diligently. I do.
So can you offer an opinion on the single barrel ancient age? The 100 proof stuff?
Yeah, it's four O's or five O's.
Oh, not ancient age. Four roses.
Oh, yeah.
The four roses. Yeah, I don't know why I said ancient age.
Well, they're cousins, but really good if you can get it for U.S. under $30 a bottle. It'd be worth it. What's it cost there?
More like 50-ish.
Buy your basic bottle of Buffalo Trace.
Really?
Yep.
Is it 100 proof?
No, it's 90, just add less water.
What is this adding water you're talking about?
I got so many looks in Abu Dhabi when I would order a Woodford Reserve or a Knob Creek. Could I have a double with one ice cube? And look at me. But they'd bring it, just exactly what I ordered. It's just to take the sharpness off.
Yeah, right. It's a mellowing agent.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, only a little bit.
Yeah. Well, people don't necessarily realize that water has flavor.
Not up here.
Now, see, unlike Carol, I put one up over the rim, and you're waiting.
Yeah.
You're not going to let it bounce harmlessly away.
Nope. I might steer away from blowjobs, you know, at my age, but no, that one I couldn't let pass. You know. Sorry, Carol.
Well.
In any event, I've developed a definite fondness for value whiskeys. The two that I'm sort of into lately are Buffalo Trace, which is the progenitor of Blanton's.
Aha. Uh-huh. I was going to say, that's not more of that Indiana whiskey, is it?
No. And the other one is one called Bullet, B-U-L-L-E-I-T.
Which is that Indiana whiskey.
Yeah, but it's good. I mean, the value for what you get.
I know, but Mike Pence and everything. I can't buy anything that comes from Indiana.
Well, you'll have to wait and forego all those purchases from Smooth Ambler then.
Well,
for a few more months.
Yeah, I realize that. The last time I tasted Smooth Ambler, Old Scout, though, was before he became the vice presidential nominee.
Yeah.
Of course, well, it's not like in buying Kentucky whiskey, I'm necessarily participating in some sort of liberal conspiracy. Although, and I need to find out who it is, there is one of those family distillery families there that supports progressive causes.
Hmm. Couldn't prove it by me. I got nothing.
It's nothing that I can really. It's my understanding one of them has been supportive of efforts to curtail mountaintop removal.
Oh, cool.
So I need to find that out for both of us so that, we may thus reward them.
And I would be happy to share. The only thing I have against Smooth Ambler, and I realize he's got a small operation, a lot of capital cost compared to the volume he's putting out. But it's pricey stuff for what you get. It's really good. You're not going to get a bad whiskey at all, but it's pricey.
It's about the same. It's about the same as that Four Roses around here, at least.
I don't know. I went to the distillery and I bought a 10-year-old bottle of Old Scout last time, and it was $70.
Whoa.
Yeah, which in U.S.
But that's the 10-year-old.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But no.
One thing though, are you familiar with? It's got to be at least moderately interesting to you. There is a little boutique distiller of Scotch in Japan. And the Japanese whiskey market is going absolutely ass wild over this stuff. And the label just has various playing card faces on it, like, Five of Clubs or, Jack of Hearts.
Do people collect them?
Apparently, the card designates, like, the age and the mash bill and all kinds of different stuff.
Weird.
I ran across where was it I was reading about it? If Robert in Japan is listening right now, he'll go and find it and let me know what it is. But that they just, because they're billing it as, he said, the distiller who, it's a labor of love, said, I'm not trying to make whiskey for the mass market. This is whiskey that's hard to drink. Otherwise, it would be Suntory. And I thought, oh, damning with faint praise.
Yeah. I've had some Suntory scotches that were damn good.
Well, this is a scotch. But apparently, he's going for something like Lefroy and Lagavulin. you know, the stuff that you kind of go, whoa, on that first little blast.
Yep.
Because, you know, that ain't Chivas.
No. Ain't no Mogan David there.
But, I had to, so you'll probably wind up looking it up, but.
I will. I'll check with Dr. Google.
And, you know, you may know somebody in those high-flown circles that you travel in who might, you know, like, go to Japan someday.
Like, bring me one back?
Yeah, or two. Because you have a friend.
Canada's got very anal about alcohol. You can bring in 1.1. Where they came up with the number, I have no idea. But I can come back from the U.S. or anywhere else in the world, and I can bring in 1.14 liters of distilled.
Oh, come on.
Yeah. Yep. I've never seen a whiskey sold in, it's either 750s or 1 liter bottles.
Or like 1.5.
Yeah, but where they came up with 1.14. I would love to have been at that meeting.
Because like 1.14, I mean, that's a quart is less. Wait.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I have metric problems. I have ciphering problems, but metric problems even more so. What? So what? You can bring in 1 liter, or you could bring in 1 750 and 6 mini bottles?
About that, or a 1 liter bottle, which is normally what I pick up when I'm coming back from the grand old country.
Even the airline mini bottles are 50s, so you can't even bring in 3 mini bottles. You can bring in 2 mini bottles and 1 with a sip out of it.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's...
Some member of the Canadian Women's Temperance Union has infiltrated the Alcoholic Beverage Control Board.
Yeah. But the good news in liquor control in Ontario, and I pass this on just for the assembled multitudes, is that Ontario has finally agreed... Well, okay, I'm going to suck back and reload. Alcohol regulations in Ontario and most Canadian provinces, with the exception of Quebec, are Byzantine at best. You can still find bars that have entrances into the beer halls and hotels for couples and women. Men can go in the couple's door. Women who are unaccompanied were supposed to go in another door, and lights would flash, bells would go off. I don't know how it worked. But what it evolved into is that Ontario, you have to buy your spirits and some beers from an organization owned by the province called the Liquor Control Board of Ontario. They are the biggest single distributor of alcohol in the Western world. If you're a vintner, getting your stuff on the LCBO wine list it'll drive your stock price up 20 points right away.
You have arrived.
You have arrived. Very good selection. I got to admit, they have an incredible selection of spirits from all over the world. Prices, not so much. A bottle of bourbon up here cost me, even before considering exchange rate, dollar for dollar, would be roughly 75% more than I would pay in the U.S. Beer has to be sold at a minimum price per can, and that's a social responsibility tax. Because if they made it cheap, people would drink more of it.
Because Canadians, eh?
Yeah. In any event, if you want spirits in Ontario, you have to go to the LCBO. If you want beer without going to the LCBO, you go to a place called, you ready for this? The Beer Store. And it's owned by Molson, Suntory, and Anheuser-Busch. So all three are foreign owned. They're not.
So wait, that Belgian Brazilian consortium hasn't gotten their mitts on it yet?
Oh, yeah. And you go in, and it's early Stalinist. You go in, and you say, I'd like a case of X by looking up on the wall and seeing all the labels and the daily price. And somewhere in the back, they put something on a roller thing, and it rolls out through this plastic sheeting with slits in it, and that's your beer. You couldn't go into a grocery store and buy beer or a corner store or wine. They have now made great progress. They've got 60 grocery stores in Ontario that are now allowed to sell beer and wine, but only at the exact same price that we would pay at either the beer store or LCBO. But it's progress.
Well, see, that's what you get for having communism.
Yep. We know best. I've been muttering about that for damn near 40 years, but we're making progress.
So, I mean, are people up? I mean, you know, you turn on the TV for the evening news. Is there coverage up there, Ron? Well, our friends to the south have completely lost their minds. They might elect an anus-mouthed orange Cheeto.
No, they tend to simply report the latest kerfluffles, but without all the rhetoric. And I talk to people every day at lunch, and they're just absolutely gobsmacked is a word that's used here a lot. One guy said,
"Is Monsieur Trudeau pricing wall building materials?"
No, he's making nice. He will find ways to cooperate with whoever's elected.
He
mostly
thinks.
Because you've heard the old story about the mouse and the elephant.
Not sure.
Yeah, well. The elephant rolls over, we're dead. So we'll get along with anybody. But
the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini's going to insist all those Merck and car building jobs come back across the border, right?
He could try, and then we'd shut off the oil, the water.
Because all kidding aside, and with a certain degree of seriousness. One of the ways, and I haven't seen anybody else mention this, one of the ways that we manifest, or one of the ways that you can sort of suss out the racism of the Trumpansies, is anytime they talk about NAFTA, the next word out of their mouth is Mexico.
Absolutely.
They tend to forget that NAFTA goes north, too.
Yeah. We're the single biggest trading partner for the U.S.
And it's as a result of NAFTA that all that yummy, yummy, yummy oil comes down here without a whole bunch of, you know, without a whole bunch of export duties and shit all over it, right?
Yep. And it's all priced in U.S. dollars.
I mean, I've got that right.
Yep, you do.
Because if we didn't have NAFTA, it wouldn't necessarily be that way.
It would probably be that way, but not necessarily so, yes. But also part of NAFTA.
Because, I mean, dipshit has said he's going to unilaterally repeal NAFTA the minute he takes office.
Yep.
And that's going to require some pretty interesting constitutional gymnastics, shall we say.
Yeah. But he's never really had to deliver on any of that. And I'm not sure it's been explained to him. But in many cases, most cases, I think, from a trade standpoint, we have far more cards in our hand than he has. We got the oil, we got the water, and as an ultimate threat, by God, we got cold fronts.
Because you've also got that weather machine up there.
Don't tell anybody. Only in the family.
Oh, I thought you were going to say something, you know, the ultimate Trump card. We've got hockey.
I saved that. Never play an ace when a deuce will do, Bob.
Well, that's true, Ron. That's absolutely true. Yeah,
but
probably the far better card player of the two of us.
There are numerous Canadians that are just really, really nervous and cannot get their heads around what the hell is going on with our friends to the south. And it's really hard to explain. I mean, it's like somebody opened up the key to a subterranean vault, and all the vampires that have been and beasties that have been hiding there for years come flooding into the light and feeling like they're free. And it's an awful thing to behold from afar, I got to tell you.
But I mean, really, and I mean, we have our jovial little conversations and everything. But Canada gets along with pretty much everybody.
Yeah, that's sort of, you know, we go
and the thing is, if Trump gets into the White House and starts working on his list of grievances, it could get a little complicated for y'all.
It could, and
I mean, even him building his great wall of Mexico is going to complicate matters for Canada, because, you know, you've got a trade relationship that travels in semi tractor trailers from Mexico through the United States and across the Canadian border.
Right. Yeah. And the other way as well. So,
well, I mean, absolutely. I mean, what? How else are the Mexicans going to get maple syrup?
And hockey players.
And poutine.
I got to tell you,
we kid, but this is real stuff, Ron.
I got to tell you, poutine. I don't know if you've ever had good poutine. If not,
I haven't had poutine at all.
Then I was absolutely dumbfounded to see it on the tapas menu in a bar in my hotel in Abu Dhabi.
Quit it.
Yep. And it was good. And it was a Canadian chef back there, one of about a dozen they had, from Sherbrooke, Quebec, who on order would make poutine. And the squeaky cheese curds and the spicy brown gravy and home-cut fries. It was as good as anything I've ever had in Canada. It was. And I'm sitting in Abu Dhabi going, cognitive dissonance, anyone? It was spectacular. And
They are determined over there to be a metropolitan global melting pot crossroads of the world.
Yeah, 92% of their population come from somewhere else.
Call me when you find the brown beans and cornbread on the menu, would you?
Oh, I already have.
No, you have not.
Oh, yeah. You'd swear they were baked in a cast iron pot buried under oak coals for 4 days. Really dark, deep brown. And cornbread from cast iron skillets.
They're stealing all of our cultural treasures, Ron.
Just the good ones.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's true. We don't have Trump yet.
No, not yet. And I didn't see a single thing orange all the time I was there. So
nobody talking about making Abu Dhabi great again?
No. No, they don't concern themselves with that. It's not like they, you know, have a, you know, inferiority complex.
By the way, you have pissed off your fellow Canadian ASA.
Oh.
I mean, to the extent that a fellow Canadian can get pissed off. ASA said, some of us haven't had dinner over on this coast yet, Ron. Jesus!
Out on the wet coast, yeah.
Exactly. But we got to get out of here, but it's been a delightful conversation, and it always is.
It's been a while, and once again, we talked about nothing. And starting to feel like a Seinfeld episode.
You know, don't be blowing out of this hemisphere without dropping a note or something. You know, because you didn't last time.
I know.
People worry.
The military call it overtaken by events. Mm-hmm. I just call it shit happens. And I was just buried for the last 2 weeks before I left.
Ick.
Yeah. And I've been buried ever since I got back. I got another week of it, but it's all good.
Well, before you go, I got to share something with you. Maybe you already know about this. Maybe this is a secret they pass out up in Canada. We had a first-time caller from Delaware a couple of nights ago.
Yeah.
Russell. And he taught all of us who have to cope with snow shovels a nifty little trick. And I'm passing it on to everybody. I'm getting downright missionary about it. Non-stick cooking spray on the shovel blade.
Oh, yeah.
Well, of course the Canadian knows it.
And I'll give you another tip of non-stick cooking spray on your satellite dish.
Oh, now that could very well matter.
Yeah, it stops the snow and ice and crap from sticking to it.
So if you use Rain-X on it, will it stop the rainy digitizing of the signal too?
Nope.
Okay. No. They haven't sorted out the rain problem yet.
No, not yet. Fiber optics, I think, is the answer. But it's in my neighborhood. I'm juggling pros and cons. But in any event, the nonstick cooking spray stops the 8 inches of wet snow from sticking to your dish.
Ho ho.
And your snow shovel.
And it's more environmentally friendly than WD-40.
Yeah. By the way, do you know what WD stands for?
No.
Water displacement.
Aha.
Aha.
Makes sense.
There you go.
I wonder if they know that out there at Energy Transfer Partners.
I think you should apply for an educational grant for this show, Bob.
What, just educate me? I've been getting educated for 11 plus years now, Ron.
And your multitude of listeners.
Multitude.
Gotta run, Bob.
All right, gotta go, Ron. Later.
Bye.
Bye now. From the soon to be frozen north, that's our buddy Ron in Canada. Gotta get out of here, but I can't get out of here before I say thank you. Thank you to Kitty from Boston, who went $20 on Carol's challenge. 30 to go. 30 to go. You had to mention Cinnamon Life, Bob, when I'm sitting here eating an avocado for dinner. Cheers. Hey, I love avocados. A little avocado, a little salt, I'm a happy man. Okay, it takes more than one, though. But yeah. Okay, so thanks, everybody, for a wonderful Thorn in the Side Thursday. Great conversation, Carol Baker. Great conversation, Ron in Canada. Thanks, everybody. Thanks for jumping in and helping out Charlie and Steve, Karen, and Cletus. Thank you very kindly. If Carol's challenge gets met, then by Jove, we will have fundraising done for this Thorn in the Side Thursday, the 3rd of November. Gotta go. Y'all have a wonderful evening. Friday on the front porch tomorrow. Good night, y'all.